This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. A new investigation by NPR, the Boston Globe, the investigative journalism nonprofit ProPublica, and several other media outlets has found that many doctors who are paid by pharmaceutical firms to promote certain drugs are ignoring their hospital's rules against that kind of freelance work. The investigation also found that almost half the money paid by pharma companies to Massachusetts doctors went to doctors affiliated with Harvard. To talk more about this story, we're joined on the line by Boston Globe reporter Liz Kowalczyk, who worked on the investigation. Liz, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Sasha.
And listeners, we're going to be taking calls during this segment. You'll find out later that there's a database available where you can type in doctors' names and potentially see if they're being paid by pharma firms. We want to know if you intend to type your doctor's name in there, and if, depending on the results, that might change the way you think you're treated or cared for or the types of drugs you're prescribed. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Liz Kowalczyk, could you give us a very brief overview, say 20, 30 seconds, of how this investigation was designed and came to be, because it's an investigation that involves several media outlets.
Mm-hmm. Well, ProPublica, which is an online independent investigative journalism organization, proposed this investigation to several partners, and they decided to do something that was very difficult to do, which is combine the public databases of seven different pharmaceutical companies and their payments to physicians.
And this was an interesting case, as I understand it, because they said, here's the topic we want to work on. Go and run with the story. So you had a lot of freedom to decide what to pursue.
Yes, we did. And, you know, all the media partners pursued somewhat different and in some cases dramatically different stories depending on their market and their location. Being in Boston, you know, our story was very different than what ProPublica did as a national story. And being here, we wanted to take a look at Harvard's role in some of these issues.
And how did you find that the Massachusetts doctors differed from other doctors in the country who are also taking money from pharma firms?
Well, ProPublica's story focused on the fact that pharmaceutical companies are using a good number of doctors and speakers who have serious disciplinary histories. And ProPublica was questioning, you know, whether these were appropriate spokespeople for pharmaceutical companies and their drugs. We didn't really find that to be a major issue here in Massachusetts. There were, you know, a handful, less than half a dozen doctors that pharmaceutical companies are listing as using as speakers who have disciplinary history. So that wasn't the focus of our story.
Your focus, as I understand it, from reading your stories, was more that even though Massachusetts has really been trying to crack down on the influence that pharma firms can have on doctors, there's still quite a lot of this going on, even at hospitals where it supposedly has stopped. Was that generally what you found?
Right. And we wanted to see specifically how many Harvard doctors are participating in this, because Harvard is gearing up for a very major change in what they allow in this area, and some of that's already in place. So we wanted to see what sort of influence this crackdown by Harvard might have on the industry and their ability to hire speakers here. But yes, even among the institutions that already have rules, enforcement has been spotty.
What do the rules typically say? Do they say no outside work for pharmaceutical firms if you're a doctor affiliated with this institution?
No, that's very rare. Consulting is still considered by most academic medical centers and medical schools as a legitimate way, you know, for doctors to interact with pharmaceutical companies. I mean, after all, they're trying to help companies, you know, develop treatments that are going to be life-saving and useful to patients. What most of the rules have focused on in terms of cracking down has been either prohibiting or severely limiting doctors' abilities to be paid speakers for pharmaceutical companies.
You were using some databases that that were created by data that the pharmaceutical companies themselves provided, and it enabled you to find out which doctors had received money on behalf of the pharma firms. But in your stories, you made it clear that the numbers are not comprehensive, so the actual number of doctors who may be receiving money could be larger we just don't know.
That's right. I mean, seven pharmaceutical companies, they are large companies, but just seven so far have posted on their websites some of their payments to physicians. So that's really a fraction, you know, of the pharmaceutical and biotech companies doing business out there. So this is really just a window into, you know, what types of doctors are receiving money and how much money they may be getting from individual companies, but it's by no means comprehensive. The state, within the next few months, will publish its own data on physicians in Massachusetts receiving money, and that will be much more comprehensive.
So later this year, patients, consumers will be able to go online, presumably, and see hopefully every doctor in Massachusetts that may be getting money from drug companies.
Yes, and all the companies that are paying them.
Medical device companies, too.
Yes.
Liz Kwolzik, we also have on the line a professor at Tufts. This is Dr. Stanley Nasrawe. He's a professor of surgery, medicine, and anesthesia. Dr. Nasrawe, thanks for coming on Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Nasrawe, you actually are paid by some pharma firms to do speakers bureau type work or sort of drug promotion. Is that right?
That's right.
And you are very open about this. Can you tell us why you don't feel the need to be defensive as some other doctors have been?
Well, I think it's important to characterize what it is you're doing. For example, when you started your program, you said that we're paid to promote a product, and that's not the way many of us who are experts see it. We're actually hired for our time and our intellectual assets to try to teach a group of listeners like doctors and nurses about a disease. And in teaching them about a disease, we also discuss the management of that disease, which includes the sponsoring company's product, but also includes non-sponsoring companies' other products. So, you know, as recently as this past week, I might have given a lecture at a community hospital to a group of practitioners who are otherwise too busy sometimes to even catch up or read up on the most current information. And we teach them about the disease, like methicillin-resistant Staph aureus as the most lethal multidrug-resistant organism in patients who are hospitalized, and talk about the different therapeutic options. And I get a chance to share my own personal experiences in managing patients who are sick, and they have a chance to access expert live and in color. That's not bad. That's a good thing.
So you're saying this basically has a huge continuing medical education role that you can provide for other doctors who don't have time to read up on all the journals and keep track of all the new drugs coming on the market.
That's exactly right. The average doctor, based on a study that was published in JAMA about 6 months ago, works about 55 hours a week. That's the average. I mean, some people are working more, some are working less. And I can tell you, with all of the documentation and scrutiny that's associated with carrying out the practice of medicine, that we are really busy, and we are hard-pressed to try to read all of the information that we need to read and then apply it at the bedside to patients. It's a real challenge, and then anything that comes along that helps us with that is a good thing.
Dr. Nasrawe, I want to bring in another voice who's also on the phone with us. This is Dr. Daniel Carlott. He's also at Tufts. He's an associate professor of psychiatry. Dr. Carlott, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Sasha.
You recently wrote a piece that I believe ran in the New York Times. Correct me if I'm wrong about that. But you talked about how you had been on the payroll for Wyeth, the big drug company. You were go around and talk about its depression drugs. And you eventually began to feel very uneasy about that. And now you don't do it anymore. Can you tell us why you had a change of heart about doing that work?
Sure. Yeah. So and certainly I think I started with the best of intentions, as the other doctor was saying. You know, you start these things with the idea that you're going to be educating doctors who do not have the time to do their own reading. And you think that you're going to teach them, as I did, about depression, about the disease. But what you end up doing, and it's really a subtle process, but what you end up doing is that you end up highlighting or embellishing, you know, the positive aspects of the sponsor's drug, and you end up downplaying the side effects. So that there's no question that if I were to consistently say bad things, and there are always bad things, there always are warts, you know, about certain drugs, bad side effects. But if I were to consistently say bad, honest things about certain drugs, the company sponsoring my talk would have never invited me back.
Well, you mentioned in your piece that you're very straightforward in that you say that the money was so good that you said at one point it left you sort of giddy to get those envelopes of cash. I think, what, $750 for one appearance at a hotel in New York. But
right. Yeah, I mean, I would typically get $750 per talk that I gave, and that was about an hour's work. And, you know, that was actually 2002. That was even more money back then.
Sure. And you mentioned in your piece that at one point you decided to sort of change your approach, and at your talk you made more disclosures that the data available was short-term, that other drugs might be just as effective. And shortly after that, the pharma rep who was your contact said you didn't seem as enthusiastic about the product, and shortly after that, you weren't doing that work anymore because that relationship had ended.
Right. They didn't fire me, but I realized that ultimately what I was doing was I was engaging in a project which the pharmaceutical companies have to try to manipulate the education of doctors by hiring doctors to do that education. And if in the aggregate, if you look at the hundreds of millions of dollars that are spent, companies are trying to control the flow of information so that the information that reaches physicians is information that's positive about their product, so that they can compete better against generics and against other products that other drug companies might be manufacturing.
Dr. Daniel Carlott, thanks for that. Dr. Stanley Nasraway, you're still with us. I wonder if you can comment on that. We have another doctor who used to do the type of work you're still doing. He says in his piece that he felt that it wasn't that he was lying, but that he had to spin the results of drug studies in a positive way, that he wasn't talking about the limitations of the data. Do you ever feel that you're in the same position, that you have to be overly sunny about drugs you're promoting?
Yeah, I think that there is a pressure exerted by some to help them sell something. But that doesn't mean that you have to subject yourself to that. That doesn't mean that you have to change your integrity. You know, your opinions belong to you. You take the information on the slides and you project what you think is the important message. And if they choose to ask you back, then that's their choice. But I'm not going to let my integrity be affected by what other people would like. Furthermore, there's a lot of pharmaceutical companies, there are a lot of drugs, and it's not right to lump them all into one big old giant basket. Just because there may be bad experiences, and I think there are, with some companies or some particular products and marketing, that doesn't hold true for all products and all companies. Some people are entirely above board. They have a genuine interest in trying to educate people about the disease, and you have a special opportunity to do that with the practitioners. So I think you take what is made available and you make it even better. You make it work well for everybody. That's what I think.
Dr. Nasraway, you're at Tufts. And
I am.
And at Harvard, at least, Harvard has quite cracked down on the amount of appearances that doctors can do on behalf of drug companies. I wonder what you think about that crackdown, because I don't, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that it is quite as limited at Tufts where you are.
No, I mean, that's because they've tried to find a balance between making sure there's monitoring constraints in place. They just revised the conflict of interest policy that they had from 2008, again this year in 2010. So Tufts has always been interested in making sure that there's a conflict of interest policy that's upheld and that's reasonable. But the idea is to strike a balance. You don't want to disconnect the people who make things, like biomedical device manufacturers and the manufacturers of the drugs that we prescribe for our patients, from the people who actually do the prescribing. The idea is to connect people, not disconnect them. And rather than have some very radical, extreme policy where you're entirely disconnected, they trust you to be an independent, intelligent person with integrity who can collaborate with industry in a reasonable fashion. And be transparent. Disclose your relationships. Let people know what you're doing. And make sure that your thoughts belong to you.
Dr. Nasraway, are you willing to tell us how much you're typically paid a year doing this kind of work, or maybe over the totality of the time you've been doing it?
Well,
how much
I would
you've been
say
paid?
That it's apparently all over Liz's article and on the NPR website. It's public record, and you can find that out. But I think that if you're a professor of surgery, medicine, and anesthesia, and you've been doing this for 25 years, you're earning probably in excess of $50,000 to $100,000 a year, and that's
doing this type of work on top of
right.
Do you mean doing
outside of the workplace to use your time and talents? And if people want to hire your skill sets and intellectual property, you have a right to do that.
Sure. And you mean $50,000 to $100,000 on top of whatever you're being paid for your day job, essentially.
That's right.
Okay.
As with anybody.
Thank you for that. That was Dr. Stanley Nasraway. Dr. Daniel Carlott, you're still with us. You're someone who used to do this kind of promotional work. Dr. Nasraway might not call it promotional work, but you used to do this kind of work. You don't anymore. Did anything you just heard from Dr. Nasraway, anything you disagree with, his take on why this is not a problem?
Well, I think the main thing is that doctors still can and do provide education for doctors, but we don't have to actually get paid by pharmaceutical companies to provide the education. As an academic doctor, it's really always been expected that we teach other doctors, both within our academic institution and to some extent in the community when they come to Grand Rounds. And we, you know, really it's an honor to be able to be an expert, to be able to be hired by a university, and to be able to share your knowledge. And we actually don't need to do this under the auspices of a pharmaceutical company. And I think that doctors actually trust their teachers more when they're not receiving thousands of dollars from a company that stands to benefit from whatever that doctor is teaching.
Dr. Carlotte, thanks for that. Liz Kowalczyk of The Globe, you're still with us. For patients out there, for consumers who'd like to know whether they can find out if their doctors are getting paid on the side doing this work, where can they go to find out?
Well, the database that ProPublica put together is at ProPublica.org, and you can search by your physician's name. But just a caution, as I said before, this is just, you know, seven companies, a fraction of the companies doing business out there, so it's not comprehensive. But if your doctor's being paid by one of those seven companies for speaking or certain kinds of consulting, they should be there in that database.
Liz Kowalczyk of the Boston Globe, thanks for coming on.
You're
the
welcome.
Show. And also Dr. Daniel Carlotte and Dr. Stanley Nazare, both of you affiliated with Tufts. Thanks to both of you also for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up next, in the last weeks of the political season, campaign ads are coming fast and furious, and some of them are considered quite controversial. We'll be analyzing some of them. Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.